Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for this Thursday, the 7th of July, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KVOI AM 1030, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, and our simulcast partners KJAA in Globe and KAPR in Douglas. The Buckmaster Show is always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We have live streaming of the show at buckmastershow.com, along with archiving all of our previous programs. We are live weekdays from noon to 1 p.m. The lineup for today's show includes leadoff interviews with University of Arizona College of Science Dean Joaquin Ruiz, and Dr. Travis Huxman will be with us. He's director of the Biosphere 2. We'll be talking about the future of that facility. Looks pretty rosy, the future these days, thanks to two additional generous gifts that have come into the biosphere. 20 minutes past the hour, Roberto Bedoya will join us in studio. Mr. Bedoya heads up the Tucson Pima Arts Council, known as TPAC. The bottom of the hour, we talk with one of the nation's leading speech therapists. We'll be talking about the challenges of regaining speech after a devastating head injury like the one suffered by Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords 6 months ago tomorrow. And we'll close out the Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show with our legal contributor, Don Luce of Luce Brown and Associates, Tucson and Scottsdale. The Buckmaster Show is an interview-driven talk show, but we encourage you to join in the discussion. If you have a comment or question, call us at 790-2040 outside of the Tucson area, 1-866-725-5467. If you have a question for any of our guests, you can call or you can email us at buckmastershow.com or reach us at Buckmaster Show on Facebook. We try to post the list of our guests at least 24 hours in advance. Well, as of July 1st, the Biosphere 2 facility in Oracle is now the official property of the University of Arizona. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show is Dr. Joaquin Ruiz, the Dean of the University of Arizona College of Science. The U of A assumed management of Biosphere 2 under the auspices of the College of Science in July of 2007. Also joining us on the Buckmaster Show microphones, Dr. Travis Huxman. He is director of Biosphere 2. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us.
Our pleasure.
Dr. Ruiz, start with you. This is you've got two generous gifts that came in. Summarize this, and what does this mean for Biosphere?
Well, I'm so proud for the University of Arizona that the owners of the Biosphere and Mr. Ed Bass as well, who developed the Biosphere in the middle 80s, felt that we were the right partners to do the dreams of Mr. Bass. So what it means is that we now have enough money to run the Biosphere completely autonomous to the university we wish to, not that we do, for at least 7 years.
Is it a separate corporation then, the Biosphere 2, or is it still – the board of regents have the ultimate authority the product?
That's right. Yeah. Now it's the University of Arizona. It's actually it's a department of the College of Science. But when we got the Biosphere from a company that actually owned it and owns the land around the Biosphere – CDO Investments, I think it's called, and Mr. Bass, through one of his foundations, gave us more than $20 million so that we could actually run it in ways that were difficult in these days when federal grants and contracts are challenging to get.
Yeah, that was from CDO, Ranching and Development Corporation.
That's right.
We're with Dr. Joaquin Ruiz, the Dean of the College of the University of Arizona College of Science, and Dr. Travis Huxman, the Director of Biosphere 2. Dr. Huxman, this has got to give you and all of your associates out there kind of an added feeling of security that this thing is actually here to stay under the auspices of the University of Arizona.
Oh yeah, this is a big benchmark for us. You know, we've spent the past 4 years building science programs, and to us this is a sign that we've done the right thing and that we've, you know, built the foundation that's going to let us really use the facility in a good way.
790-2040. Perhaps you've been to Biosphere. Maybe you haven't been there. If you've been there, whether you like the experience, didn't like the experience, these are the two gentlemen to phone in and ask questions of and give your comments to about Biosphere 2. Let's go back to Dr. Ruiz. Overall, is Biosphere doing, continuing to do very well? Or give us sort of an overview since that 2007 benchmark when the University of Arizona got involved.
Well, let me just back off just 1 second, Bill, and say the Biosphere is and has been and still is a unique experimental facility for environmental research. And many of the grand challenges that we have today in environmental research really can only be addressed experimentally in a place like the Biosphere. So we are in a unique place with what we can or cannot do in the Biosphere. Columbia did some extraordinary experiments when they had it.
Yeah, they had it for a couple of years, right?
That's Columbia? Right. And they did things in there. Their idea was to seal the place and increase the amount of CO2 and see what the response of the Earth biosphere would be if you increased CO2 like we see today because of global climate change. And they were able to show that the oceans acidified, that the corals died. They were able to do a lot of very interesting stuff. When they left, we, in particular Travis, who's here, and he can tell you more about it, decided that there were many, many experiments that could be done just as profound as those that the Columbia did, but that didn't require the whole thing to be sealed.
Dr. Ruiz. Travis, add a little bit there and pick up on Dr. Ruiz's comments about some of the things you can do that perhaps Columbia was not doing or should have been doing or whatever.
Well, Columbia really showed us that the building works as a scientific apparatus. They did the work that convinced the scientific community that we can measure things inside of it. And so what we did is we optimized the question, and we focused on these questions that were relevant to the place where we live, questions of water and questions of drought, questions of how ecosystems respond to drought, understanding how water behaves in our landscape so that we can make better models of hydrology. And it turns out that when we ask those kinds of questions, we can use the building in a more interesting way. We can run it in a more open flow mode, which is cheaper, but also ends up doing better science because we're able to make better measurements of what the atmosphere is doing. So we were in sort of a win-win position when we started thinking about our new research programs.
You know, when you have something, a tourist attraction like Biosphere 2 right in your own backyard, maybe it's because we take things for granted if they are in our backyard. Many people have not been to Biosphere 2. What can you offer the public? What will they see, Travis Huxman, if they come out to the facility?
Well, we strive to be a scientific place that's in the public face. So what they're going to see is exactly how big science gets carried out. They're going to get an exposure to the infrastructure and the engineering of this amazing building. They get guided through the facility with professional guides that help to interpret the science. They interpret the history of the building also. It's a real experience about the grand challenges that face society today in the environment, questions of water and energy sustainability. It's also an exciting place to come and see young people that are doing research, you know, to interact with students, for example.
It's 12:13 on the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Ruiz, the Dean of the College of Science at the University of Arizona, and Dr. Huxman, who directs the Biosphere 2 project. Dr. Ruiz, this is some – I think the whole thing started with Biosphere, and maybe Travis can also jump in. Wasn't it 20 years ago that the whole experiment began? Yeah, Travis is shaking his head. Yes.
That's right.
So we're at the 20-year anniversary of Biosphere
right.
2, and a lot of people didn't take it seriously, did they, when the whole thing started?
Well, I think the problem when it began was that there was a lot of hoopla about the social aspect of the biosphere.
How would these people interact in this sealed
exactly
environment?
Right. Yeah, so it also almost became like a science fiction kind of thing with a psychological experiment of people being put in a place for a year and see how they would respond to that kind of a challenge. But in the end, what we keep forgetting is that when Biosphere 2 was developed Biosphere 2 was supposed to be mimic Biosphere 1, which is where we live. And they tried to develop an environment in which they could control the concentrations of the gases in the atmosphere so that they would be like in our atmosphere, that they would basically recreate the Earth. And we forget that the most important thing that happened in that experiment is that it failed. That we were able to show that very, very smart people working really, really hard, spending a ton of money, were not able to reproduce our Earth. And so we're living in quite an extraordinary environment. And
sometimes we learn the most, don't we, through a failure.
Oh, yeah. It's experiments. Experiments that work don't teach us anything.
No.
They just tell us that we were right, that our preconceived ideas were correct. Experiments that fail are the ones that really educate us, make us think about where we went wrong and how our preconceived ideas are wrong.
This is Bill Buckmaster on the Buckmaster Show with Dr. Joaquin Ruiz from the University of Arizona and Dr. Huxman, Travis Huxman from Biosphere 2. Gentlemen, both have your headsets on, so you'll be able to hear. Mike has a question. Mike, go ahead. I want to talk about the financial sustainability of Biosphere 2. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you for taking my call. That is the question I had. I know in the past they've bled money for years and they've made money in certain times with a 7-year cushion and attendance coming up on that, and maybe even charging students to be housed there. Is there a chance that they could keep the university from bleeding money and that they could actually maybe even turn a profit or enough to help the departments out?
Well, it's our commitment. It was our commitment both to the university as well as to the donors of the facility that we were going to make a go at it as best as we could so that it would be self-sustaining. But I think you have to think – but that implies all kinds of things. You have to think of the biosphere the same way that you would think of a telescope or the same way that you would think of an ocean drilling vessel. There is a minimum amount of money that's required to keep the place running, and that's to pay the electricity and whatnot. And then there's an enormous amount of money that's required to do the research. And I think the whole experiment would be a failed experiment if we cannot write grants and contracts to do the research. And the foundational money that we have is the money that's required to just keep the place open so that we can do research. So that's how you have to think about that. And that amount of money is not a whole lot, actually, especially the way that we run it now, which isn't sealed the way that Columbia was running it. So our commitment, and if we can't do it, we shouldn't be in this business anyway, is that we should be writing enough grants and contracts to do research in the biosphere that will keep it going. The tourism is also an income. It's an income flow. But that cannot keep the place going at all. It shouldn't keep the place going at all. It's just another income that we have. Tourism to us, more important than the income, is a way of educating our community about what science is all about.
Good question, though, about the economic sustainability. Dr. Huxman, you want to join in there?
Yeah, I look at this as an opportunity. We essentially have an apparatus that no one else has that lets us ask very interesting questions. We have a source of funds that can keep that operating for a period of time. And we have an obligation now to turn that around and to raise the money to do science, whether it's through federal grants and contracts or other sources. And the outreach is an opportunity, too, for us. It's a chance for us to think about how the university communicates to the public and to its, to the local population. And so our goal and our business plan is to really run with that, to run with those opportunities.
As far as tourism, do you have plans for a kind of a hotel or anything up there, Dr. Ruiz?
Well, we have a million plans. let me tell you that.
You have a Ritz-Carlton in your back pocket.
Yeah, our imagination is not something that failed us here, but I think we need to go at this little by little. But indeed, one of the things that anybody that's gone to the biosphere has recognized is that the there's a village of next to the biosphere where we're trying to create an institute, a think tank, that's going to be dealing with issues of water and energy in semi-arid environments.
Let's try to get another call in here. We've got about a minute or so to go. Ben is ready on the line. What changes, Ben wants to know, have taken place? Go ahead, Ben.
Well, we were at the biosphere some close to 20 years ago, and we're interested to see what changes have taken place since then. For example, is the air the same as it was 20 years ago, or have there been changes?
Yes.
Travis Huxman, the director, will answer your question there. Go ahead, Travis.
So we manage the atmosphere in the building in a very different way now. So the air is very different. We essentially use the building as a we use recycling the air through the building as a way of making measurements. So that's something that's very different about 20 years ago. What one of the things we're doing with the building is we're re-engineering large portions of it that allow us to ask replicated questions, because when the Biosphere 2 was constructed, it was an unreplicated experiment. And so our goal is to subdivide components and do the replication that's required for really doing good science. But large parts of it are still the same. The tropical forest is now a forest that's 20 years old, and it's really incredibly unique.
So the forest is growing at tropical speed, not southern Arizona desert speed.
Oh, absolutely. We have to trim it back and keep it from bursting through the glass.
Travis Huxman, thank you very much, director of the Biosphere 2. Thank you also to Dr. Joaquin Ruiz, the dean of the College of Science. Lots of stuff going on at the College of Science. And Dr. Ruiz, we'd like to have you back on the Buckmaster Show, kind of on a semi-regular basis, to tell us what's going on.
Well, Bill, I'm a big fan of yours, and I'd be more than happy to do that.
Thank you so much. 12:21 on the Buckmaster Show. We'll be talking about arts in Pima County next. Stay with us.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways. With 30 projects underway, including River Road to Ruthroth along La Cholla and the Star Pass Mission Road intersection. Please use caution in the area and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has also implemented transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And now open in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tankaverde, at the southwest corner of Tankaverde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tankaverde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tankaverde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
It's 12:25 on the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster. The Buckmaster Show is primarily interview-driven. It's an interview-driven talk show, but we encourage you to join in the discussion with your comments or questions. We just had a very good session on Biosphere 2. That's what I like about this program. It is interactive. You can join in wherever you are in Southern Arizona. We figured it out with the reach of this station going all the way to Phoenix and all the way over eastward to New Mexico, almost to Yuma to the west, down into Old Mexico. We certainly are touching perhaps 8 of the Arizona counties with this show, so it's a very wide reach. You can call us on the Buckmaster Show live line at 790-2040, 790-2040. If you're outside of the Tucson area, you can use our toll-free number, 1-866-725-5467. You can also email us with your questions. If you have a question for any of our guests, you can email us at buckmastershow.com, or you can reach us at Buckmaster Show on the Facebook. We're trying to post the list of our guests at least a day in advance on Facebook. So you have an opportunity to reach us several ways, and we want to hear from you nonetheless. However you reach us, that's the way to do it. The Buckmaster Show is live Monday through Friday, right here on KVOI and our voice partners. So give us a buzz when you get the opportunity. My producer, Rosemary Brandt, is always available to answer your call. It's very simple. She'll take down your name. We'll try to get you on the air with our guests, but please try to be concise and to the point as we try to move along this show very quickly. If you're online, please feel free to look us up on Facebook. Leave your comments and questions there on Facebook as well. Also, the website, it's buckmastershow.com. We've got some very interesting information up on Buckmaster Show. Very excited about this new collaboration that we just joined up with, TucsonSentinel.com. You might want to check them out. They're an online service of news. We will have live news updates on our website, and there will be a live link to TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan Smith is the publisher and editor over there. He's also one of our regular contributors to the Friday Roundtable here on the Buckmaster Show. About our contributors, we have a list on BuckmasterShow.com of 24 or so of our contributors. The Tucson Pima Arts Council has received grants from 2 national foundations totaling $250,000 to support local projects that use the arts as a tool to address social issues in the community. Joining us now on the Buckmaster Show is Roberto Bedoya. Mr. Bedoya, good to see you. He is the executive director of the Tucson Pima Arts Council. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's good to have you on the program. Tell us about these two foundations, these grants.
Sure. We're really happy that we were successful in bringing in these national monies to our community. It's rare, actually, that national foundations actually invest in mid-sized American cities. They're generally support projects that are on the big cities and the coasts. So we have been able to demonstrate to these two foundations, the Open Society and the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the value of our community, especially in the area of community arts.
And these two foundations, this money will go to what?
Well, we have an initiative that we've had in place for a couple of years called the Place Initiative, which supports arts-based civic engagement work. So artists that look at sort of issues that are in our communities and figure out creative responses to that. So we have monies now from these two foundations to continue that for the next 2 years.
Roberto Bedoya, we'll keep him over here after the break and talk a bit more with him. We are going to take a break on the Buckmaster Show. We'll be back to talk about TPAC and what they're up to, and that's coming up. Stay with us.
With SRN News, I'm Wally Hines in Washington. President Obama says lawmakers of both parties agree on the importance of raising the debt limit by August 2nd, and he'll reconvene them Sunday to get down to the hard bargaining that's necessary to get that deal done. After 3 years behind bars awaiting trial on murder charges, Casey Anthony will be set free next Wednesday. She was sentenced today to 4 years for lying to authorities but given credit for time served. In what could have been a constitutional showdown with the president, the House today rejected a measure that would have cut off funds for U.S. participation in the operation against Libya. The vote came on a proposed amendment to the Defense Department Appropriations Bill. NASA's checking for any damage to the space shuttle Atlantis or the launch pad after a lightning strike today. Weather experts say there's only a 30% chance of acceptable weather for tomorrow's scheduled final launch in the space shuttle program. More details at SRNNews.com.
Well, 12:31 back on the Buckmaster Show, and we're going to continue our conversation with Roberto Bedoya. Mr. Bedoya is the executive director of the Tucson Pima Arts Council. For those that may not know, Mr. Bedoya, about TPAC, just give us a brief thumbnail sketch about what TPAC is all about.
Sure. TPAC, the Tucson Pima Arts Council, is a designated local arts agency that serves the city and the county. So we receive public funds, and we support over 60 organizations. We support arts education projects. We facilitate all the public art in the region, and we do research and support also special projects.
You know, the arts, like everything else, Roberto, have really taken a hit into the economy when the market really went south a couple of years ago. It was tough, and you're still recovering, right?
It is. It has been tough, and it still is tough. But the Arts Council is not immune than any other sector in our community. As a cultural industry, though, I think we're sort of sometimes invisible in terms of the impact that we have in terms of our economy.
It is a huge impact, and I went back to the 2005 numbers, and research showed that not-for-profit arts and culture – certainly were a significant industry in Tucson and Pima County, one that generated nearly $58 million to the local economic impact. We don't really have current numbers, do we?
No, we're involved in updating that information. We're involved in the current sort of we do this analysis every 5 years. And it's aggregated and puts us in the national context, like how Tucson fares with Fort Worth or San Francisco. So we'll have the new information out at the beginning, about a year from now.
And we'll be some of the first to know, I hope, right here,
yes,
on the Buckmaster
definitely.
Show.
We're actually doing another new research project, which will, in the beginning of January, we'll be able to roll out trying to track the, what we call the local arts index, which looks at our vitality, looks at the nonprofit sector and the commercial arena, look at how many nightclubs we have, how many independent booksellers we have. That all is part of the cultural industry. That's all part of, you know, kind of the economy of the cultural industries in our town, as well as sort of gives us a good portrait of like how we enjoy the arts here.
And, you know, I don't think I'm alone in this, that when my wife and I travel and we do a lot of vacation travel, we've visited nearly 90 countries. One of the things we like to do, whatever city we're in, we like to go to galleries and we like to bring home a piece of art. And I think that's kind of what Tucson is looking for in the arts tourism industry.
That is correct. I mean, I think that this that local arts index that I just mentioned will give us a better portrait of all of our commercial gallery spaces, how they operate, what they do. So, you know, the whole breadth of cultural expression here is evident not only in the practice number of practicing artists, but also the galleries. You know, every fall we do the Open Studio Tour, which...
That's a great event.
Right. There's over 200 artists open up the gallery, and it's an opportunity to really get to know intimately, you know, our artistic community.
Have you set a date for that event in the fall yet?
Sure. I don't know the exact date,
but it's
the second weekend in November.
Second weekend in November, and that should be great. And hopefully we'll have you back on the program before then, and we'll have some more research numbers on how we're doing in the arts. We've lost a lot of galleries, though, haven't we, during this, or have we?
Yes, we have, but
maybe
we
not a lot. Maybe not a lot, but some obviously did fall by the way.
Yeah, I mean, but what we haven't lost is sort of our creative community. Artists are still working here. They're still making work. They're finding their markets online or in other cities as well as locally. I mean, and just sort of moving beyond the visual arts, our theater community, our choir community, they're very robust. And so that really speaks to our vitality.
It is a strong arts community. Roberto Badoya, thank you very much. He's the executive director of the Tucson Pima Arts Council. Thanks for being on the Buckmaster Show. And we will have you back.
Very good.
Thank you so much. Coming up now on 12:36 on the Buckmaster Show, a well-known speech therapist will be talking with us next. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinca Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinca Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Everyone's piling on big banks nowadays, with good reason. But still, you're skeptical about moving your money. We get it, but let's think about that.
If you're worried about convenience, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has local branches and thousands of fee-free ATMs nationwide. If you're worried about service, at Pyramid, you're a member. At big banks, you're a number. There's a difference. And if you're worried about savings, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has better rates and fewer fees than big banks. Like our great low 4.5% APR on new, used, or refinanced vehicle loans with terms up to 60 months. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options. So Pyramid wins on convenience, service, and savings. If you're still skeptical about moving your money, try us out. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Visit pyramidfcu.com to learn how. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
It's 12:39 on the Buckmaster Show on KVOI, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, and I am Bill Buckmaster. Tomorrow marks the six-month anniversary of the Tucson shooting rampage and assassination attempt on the life of Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. While the Congresswoman continues to make some great physical progress from the shot to the head, she is struggling to regain her speech. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show is a man who has been called, in fact, I think I may have called you this, the dean of Tucson's speech pathology when I interviewed you more than 20 years ago on the TV side. Dr. Daniel Boone is professor emeritus from the University of Arizona's Speech, Language, and Hearing Department. He's past president of the American Speech, Language, and Hearing Association. He's published 15 books. His latest is a collection of short stories about people with aphasia, a language disorder caused by acquired brain damage. Dr. Boone, it's good to see you. And we first met, when I had first moved down here from the San Francisco Bay Area to do the TV show over 20 years ago, and we were talking about simple things people can do to improve their speech. We'll get to that in a minute, but you've been kind of watching from what you've been reading about Congresswoman Giffords, and what's your experience? This is a difficult road to hoe.
I've had more experience working with aphasia than anything else. I started during the Korean War, and I was assigned a boy that hadn't said anything for over 6 months. He had a bullet go through his left eye. It's the left side of the brain that houses what we do, what we call language. And by language, you lose some of the ability to speak, but you lose some ability to write, some ability to understand what others say, some ability to read. So it's a little more than just a speech defect per se.
Can you, with the proper training from professionals like yourself, can you attempt to get back most of what's been lost?
I generally say that about one-third of the people that acquire aphasia make a complete recovery. A good example was Dwight Eisenhower, who had aphasia when he was president of the United States.
He had a stroke, correct?
He had a stroke. Most aphasias are caused by something like a stroke, where the brain doesn't get the blood it needs, cells die, and you have some loss of function. About a third of people who acquire it never make any recovery at all. And there's a great middle third that we work hard with, and it's often related to the personality of the person. If they really want to dig in, practice, practice, practice. I worked with this one boy that I started with 9 months, twice a day.
That was this is somebody that was shot through the eye in the Korean War.
His name is Louis.
So I mean, you've been at this a long time. It's pretty hard, I guess, for you to judge from a distance. But from what you're reading from the Congresswoman, does she sound like she could be perhaps in that third that makes a full recovery?
Definitely she'll make a lot of recovery.
Maybe that middle third you talked about.
Well, she could be a lot higher than that because she's young. Where she didn't have damage from the bullet, she has a normal brain. People that have had strokes that have aphasia, they don't have normal brain tissue to begin with. So the personality of the person will have a lot to do with how well they recover.
You know, when I watched the Oscar award-winning film, The King's Speech, I thought of you, Dr. Boone.
Thank you, that's a flattering.
I did, because I know that you have worked with people who have the problem of stuttering. And what is your approach to that? Is that the twofold therapy? I guess, first of all, you have to modify the block.
Yeah, right. You modify the fear block. The biggest problem you have when you stutter is fear of stuttering. So a lot of our focus is, you know, is it really so bad? Older people, people over 70, rarely stutter because they have lost the fear. They kind of say, what the heck? I'll go ahead and do it. And once you have that attitude, you don't do it very much. But I'm working with a stutterer, worked with one today, has enormous fears. And
how old an individual?
He's a student at the university, 22.
Okay.
And he had almost completely recovered. He was fluent and had some things go wrong in the last few weeks, and it all came back again. So I put him back on the schedule.
So it's back. There's certainly a component that's from anxiety, isn't there?
Yeah. It begins about the end of the third year of life, and the first thing we do when they're little children is modify the block, because the fears really haven't developed. And very successfully, our profession can modify the block.
Only about a minute to go with Dr. Daniel Boone. Dr. Boone, a man I think I dubbed the Dean of Tucson Speech Pathology, and I'm glad I did that. Five quick steps for a better voice. I kind of previewed that at the beginning of our talk, so give us a few hints real
quick. One thing is you can cut down the number of words you say in one breath. You could talk like President Obama. He talks 7 or 8 words per breath. And he's fluent. He always has a good voice. So cutting down the number of words gives your vocal cords a better chance to function. A second is use the pitch level that you ought to use. And that is usually the pitch level that's around the expression, And if you use that pitch level, your vocal folds function much better.
Give us a couple more. I've got time for three,
another would be the rate of speech, how fast you talk. Normal folks talk about 150 words a minute. Take a passage from a magazine, read it aloud, see if you where you are. If you can slow your rate down a little bit, you'll sound better and people will understand you better. That would be a useful one. Another is put a smile on your face.
I'm smiling as I'm
because when you smile, all the muscles in the face which contribute to resonance function better.
Yeah, I think that's a big one. Dr. Boone, thank you very much for being with us. It's a pleasure seeing you again, and you're going strong. May I ask publicly how old you are?
I am 83.
Unbelievable. Yeah. This guy looks so good. 83 years old, Dr. Daniel Boone, Professor Emeritus of Speech at the University of Arizona. 1247 on the Buckmaster Show. Our legal contributor, Don Luce, he is next. Stay with us.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit Service. With 30 projects under construction, including Tanque Verde Road and the Catalina Highway to Houghton and the bus pullout at Ina and Oracle, please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you. Biro Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh, homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Biro Amore. Casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Biro Amore in Tucson on North Swan at Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at biroamorepizza.com. And now in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub. If you're having foot or lower back pain, you're not alone. My foot doctor recommended custom foot orthotics created by Bob Novak. Bob is a certified pet orthist and best in Southern Arizona at creating just the right foot support at a price you can afford. Please give Bob Novak, the owner of Arizona Limb and Brace, a call at 795-2553 or visit Bob at Rosemont and 5th. I did, and my feet thank me every day. From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com. Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
$12.50 on the Buckmaster Show, and a quick reminder, the Friday Focus interview tomorrow will be with Pima County Sheriff Clarence Dupnik, reflecting on the six-month anniversary of the assassination attempt on Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. We are joined now by Attorney Don Luce of Luce, Brown & Associates in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor. I always look forward to these sessions, learn a lot about the law with Mr. Luce. He's the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Don Luce, good to see you. Good to see you, Counselor.
Thanks, Bill. Good to be back.
The U.S. Supreme Court really had Arizona on the radar screen this session, didn't they?
They did. The Clean Elections case just came out, but that was preceded by several other cases, including, if you go back a couple of months, the Wynn case, which involved tuition support organizations, in other words, Arizona's tax credit, which was under attack, and then the employer sanctions law, which finally got to the Supreme Court, came down about a month ago, and still pending before the Supreme Court is SB 1070, which has found its way up through the Ninth Circuit and now at the Supreme Court. So Arizona is well represented before the United States Supreme Court.
You know, a portion of the Clean Elections law, I think the ruling on the High Court was 5-4 on that, was thrown out. It did not kill entirely Clean Elections, did it? But it I guess you could say it gutted Clean Elections.
Yeah, it sure did. What the court found was that the matching funds provision was unconstitutional. But, you know, this case was similar to others that have come before the courts, and Arizona isn't the only state to have a clean elections law, although we're one of the oldest clean elections laws on the books. Ours was passed by voter initiative in 1998, but there are other states that have these laws, and other states' laws, too, have been struck down on various grounds. So it's a real political and legal battle involving essentially at this juncture ideological splits. The First Amendment is at the base of it, and this recent decision shows just how divided the Supreme Court is on the issue. It was pretty predictable. Justice John Roberts wrote the majority decision, and then the dissent was written by Justice Elena Kagan.
I do not think, though, we have heard the last of clean elections. I know there'll probably be an attempt to put before the voters in 2012 and change the wording, probably.
Well, my understanding is that the legislature has, in fact, decided to put it on the ballot. So
okay.
I think on the fall ballot, we're going to see a proposal to essentially defund the public financing of public elections.
Also, in the legal realm, we had a very interesting ruling. This came down from a Maricopa County Superior Judge. I believe it was Richard Gamma?
Yes.
Yeah. Newly enacted restrictions on abortion services in Arizona, especially those in several small cities, are being put on hold before they take effect while the judge is considering a legal challenge. What is at the heart of this legal argument?
Well, the petitioner in this case, Planned Parenthood, is contending that the restrictions that the legislature is placing on the medication abortions, which is really the heart of the contest, are unconstitutional. The position taken by Planned Parenthood is that the legislature, in light of the Supreme Court's 1973 decision, Roe versus Wade, doesn't have the authority or jurisdiction to restrict the medication abortions to the extent that this new law proposes to do so. Now, interestingly, this new law, which imposed the restrictions, was scheduled to take effect July 20th. However, it will not take effect. The existing laws will remain in place until this legal issue is resolved. Judge Gamma has set a hearing in that case for August 22nd. So it looks like the laws that are currently on the books will remain on the books at least through the end of the summer.
So that that probably is not the end of the story there, at least for a couple more months.
That's correct. And interestingly, there's another case before the Court of Appeals involving essentially the same issue. So there have been two lawsuits, both challenging the new law. Both are in the judicial system, one at the trial court level, one at the Court of Appeals level. And either one of those cases could determine the outcome of the new amendments to the abortion statutes.
There was an interesting story about restitution court. This was a piece in the Arizona Daily Star that the restitution court is seeing a noticeable payoff. Don Luce, what is restitution court?
Well, let's start with what is restitution.
What is it?
Restitution is a name given to when a person who has done wrong pays back the victim for the harm that was caused. So in many criminal proceedings, the criminal judge will order the defendant or the wrongdoer to pay to the victim restitution. This is typically a specified sum of money, and the defendant is required as part of his or her sentence to make restitution. Now, this restitution court, which was funded by a grant that Pima County received, is there for the sole purpose of ensuring that people who are out on probation, in other words, they've already been found or pled guilty, are required to make the restitution that has been ordered. I found it interesting to read the details as to how this is actually being enforced. With the money that Pima County was given to launch this restitution court, they actually have the resources to send people out on behalf of the court to probationers' homes and see what's what. Now, in those cases where they discover that the probationer has just purchased a large screen TV or has other luxuries.
That BMW out front. I don't know about that.
Well, the point is that in those cases, the investigator has the ability to ask the Superior Court to hold a hearing to determine if the probationer is able to make restitution. And in the last year, over 100 hearings have been held for that purpose. And if the judge finds that the probationer is able to make restitution and isn't, that probationer's probation can be revoked.
Talking with Don Luce, he's the legal contributor to the Buckmaster Show, and he's also the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Where are these two books available? I guess Amazon is a good place to begin.
The books are available in all retail bookstores statewide and also Amazon.com.
Arizona Laws 101, are you going to have to revise that pretty soon?
Well, it's funny you should ask because
with all the laws that the state legislature passes.
That is so true. The second edition of Arizona Laws 101 is scheduled for publication early next year.
And there'll be a few new laws in there, or update what you've got?
There will be three new chapters dealing with guns, nonprofit corporations, and homeowners associations. Those were the three topics that were not included in the first edition. And I can't tell you how many people have asked me questions about those things. So those will be included. And the book will be completely revamped and updated to make sure that it's 100% current. And all of the changes that the legislature has made to the laws of the state of Arizona are reflected.
Okay, Don Luce of Luce, Brown & Associates in Tucson and Phoenix. Thanks for being with us. We will see you the first Thursday of the month. That means see you in August.
Thanks, Bill. See you in August.
Thanks a lot, Don Luce. The Buckmaster Show, brought to you in part by Flowers & Rieger Associates Certified Public Accountants, 2919 East Broadway, on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers & Rieger, the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Coming up tomorrow, the Friday Radio Roundtable, Jim Nensel from the Tucson Weekly, Mark Evans from TucsonCitizen.com. Our newsmaker interview at the top of the hour Friday will be Pima County Sheriff Clarence Dupnik. Have a great afternoon.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR Douglas. And 1240 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.